ButcherBox delivers healthy 100% grass-fed beef, organic chicken, and pork directly to your door. All their products are humanely raised and free of antibiotics and hormones. You can think of them as the neighborhood butcher for modern America. Each box comes with 7 to 10 pounds of meat, which is enough for about 20 individual-sized meals, depending on how big you are and how hungry you are. You can choose from 4 different box types: all beef, beef and chicken, beef and pork, or the mixed box. My favorite would be the all beef. You can also customize your box with add-on types like bacon, ribeye, and beef bones. I love that stuff. You get some high-quality bacon, you get ribeye, which is the best steak you can get, and beef bones are how you make beef broth. It's basically your meat for the month in a box. They also include step-by-step recipe cards and a note from the butcher describing the cuts and farms featured that month. I've seen these guys everywhere from Mark Sisson's show to the Today Show, and for good reason. Sourcing high-quality meat you can trust is hard, especially in some areas of the country, and the fact that they deliver for free nationwide is pretty cool. By taking out the middleman, grocery stores, and purchasing direct from farms, ButcherBox can help you buy meat at a lower cost, and then you benefit from that. So it's a cool business model that makes sure you get the best value instead of just passing it off on the supply chain. The price is just $129 a month, which works out to less than $6.50 a meal. Every box comes with enough meat for at least 20 individual sized meals, and shipping is free nationwide except for Alaska and Hawaii. Sorry, guys. Order now and get free 100% grass-fed burgers. You get 6 6-ounce burgers in your first box. And use the code BULLETPROOF to get an extra $10 off. Get started by visiting butcherbox.com/bulletproof. You can cancel any time without penalty, so give it a try. Visit butcherbox.com/bulletproof to get your free 100% grass-fed burgers. You get 6 of them and $10 off with the code BULLETPROOF. Get your meat now. That's butcherbox.com/bulletproof.
Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500. Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us, and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today's cool fact of the day is that there's a direct relationship between the bacteria in your gut and the myelin. This is the insulation on the nerves in the front of your brain called the prefrontal cortex. The more insulated your nerves are, the better they work. And it appears that some gut bacteria actually inhibit neuron function, and basically they can make you stupid. Today's guest is none other than James Altucher. James is a successful entrepreneur, an angel investor, chess master, prolific writer. He's started and run only like 20 companies, which, you know, geez, only 20. Of those, 17 have failed and 3 have made him tens of millions of dollars. So he's a global playboy. Oh, okay, maybe not. But
No, I stay home.
Yeah, what exactly. Well, one of really interesting guys that I know, and his writing's been all over the place, like Wall Street Journal, New York Observer, TechCrunch, Financial Times, Yahoo Finance, and he runs the well-known podcast, The James Altucher Show. And if you haven't heard the show, you owe it to yourself to check that out. It's a good show.
Particularly the 3 episodes that a young man named Dave Asprey has been on.
Yeah, those were my favorite episodes, I have to say.
Yes.
And it's, let's see, you should always read his blog, jamesaltucher.com, which has had about 20 million readers. And let's see, you're the author of 18 books, including some Wall Street Journal bestsellers, The Power of No, Choose Yourself, and Reinvent Yourself. So, James, welcome. And this is not your first time on Bulletproof Radio.
Well, Dave, thanks for having me on the show. I'm so excited. I'm a big fan, obviously.
Well, and likewise, I appreciate what you've done and what you're doing, just the way you think about stuff. You're very purposeful in what you do. And today I want to interview about something that it is intriguing to me. We'll call it the anti-minimalism podcast. I just did an interview with the minimalist guys, and it went really, really well. It's fascinating.
Good guys, and I like them. And there's, I'm not, when I say anti, it's not a judgment,
yeah, right? Not at all.
Like, everybody has their own philosophy of life that makes them happy. And, you know, I think you, rather than subscribe to any one other person's philosophy, you should sort of choose the one that fits you.
Okay. What you did over the last year is a little bit nutty, I would just say, where you got rid of most of your belongings and you started living out of Airbnbs.
Right. So, a little over a year ago, I threw out not some or most, I threw out all of my belongings. Maybe I left myself with what I did was I was away. And I had a lease coming up on 2 different apartments that I was renting, one in the city, one in the town by my kids. And while I was away, I had a friend of mine I paid to go to both places and either sell, keep, donate, or throw out 100% of the items. Like, I don't want to ever go to those apartments again. I don't want to deal with the almost fatigue of trying to figure out how to, like, once again manage all of these objects and possessions. And most people don't realize how many objects they have.
It's
like
crazy.
If you take all of your objects and kind of put them in garbage bags, and I know this because I've seen the photos now of my own objects, it's like 100 garbage bags worth of stuff. And I wasn't really living a maximalist life before, but you just accumulate over years and decades all of this stuff. And so I got rid of everything, and I didn't want to deal with renting again, because renting also is kind of like extra work I don't want to do.
It's high friction.
It's high friction. It's all these credit checks and references. And the last time I rented, I had to do five references. I had to call up people and ask them to write letters, 5 people. Then I had to have my lawyer write a letter. Then my accountant write a letter. Then, because I've never been in debt in my life, I've never had a credit card, my credit score was wacky. So I had to meet every single person in the building and explain why I didn't live like the normal American and accumulate all this debt that I would then pay off for years.
Yeah, here's the companies I've sold. Wave your bank account balance. Like, how do you even have that conversation? That's hilarious. Okay,
it was hilarious. Yeah, and everything went fine, but I didn't want to. And then, of course, because of that, I still had to put down 2 months security deposit, first month's and last month's rent. And then you have the normal thing where when you rent a place, you have to buy all sorts of furniture and maintenance and all that. So I figured, you know what? I'm just going to do Airbnbs so I could experience other lifestyles whenever I want, or I could stay in places for longer if I want. And I can vary it up a little and see how other people live and not worry about all of the maybe hundreds of many decisions that used to kind of follow me around from place to place. And so I've been doing this now a year, almost to the day.
So I've written a lot in Headstrong and the Bulletproof Diet about decision fatigue and just how making dumb decisions takes your life. And I religiously avoid as many of those decisions as I can. Like, I don't know what day of the week it is. I don't know where I'm going next. It's all on my phone. And anytime I can outsource that. But I got to say, running a house is a pain in the ass, whether it's rented or even purchased, which is another huge amount of friction. So you adjusted your life to just reduce friction rather than to be minimalist.
Right. So in many of your books, you talk about your story and how you were sensitive to these mycotoxins, these small toxic, you know, materials in the yeah. environment. So I will say I wanted to avoid kind of almost the decision equivalent of mycotoxins yeah. because
they float around everywhere and each one makes you a little bit weak, right?
Right. Like there's, of course there's big decisions like who should I be in relationships with? Where should I live? And all that stuff. But then there's just thousands of mini decisions where, my Wi-Fi is down. Like who do I call to fix it? Or little things like I got to buy a chair for this or I've got to, you know, maintain this. And there's all these little decisions you have in maintaining possessions and maintaining a house. And I wanted to avoid all of them. And so what I wanted to do was make a larger percentage of the day. Every day, let's say we make 10,000 choices, yeah. big and small. So I wanted to make a bigger percentage of my choices about what I really want to do as opposed to things that I have to do or choices I have to make. And you can't be 100%. But you can get, you know, fairly close. You can get higher and higher. So like, for instance, this mm-hmm. podcast, something I wanted to do. I choose to do it.
Right.
So I wake up in the morning. I'm in I didn't have to buy the bed. I didn't have to buy a place with my view. I picked an Airbnb and picked the ideal place and there for 2 weeks. And this is where I'll be. So it's an easy decision. I could change views later. Change furniture later. But
what about like packing up all your crap? Like I'm for the
I have three outfits okay. in one bag, and I have another bag with a computer and a tablet and a phone, and I have right in front of me your book Headstrong, and I have a pen and a waiter's pad.
Wow. And what do you do with my book when you're done reading it?
Oh, I'll give it away.
Cool.
So because I read a lot of books for my podcast, and I have to give them away unless I'll get them on my Kindle, but okay. I have to give away the
physical copy. Right?
Yeah. So and by the way, I love physical copies of books. Yeah. This is not about being 100% happy. People kind of think, oh, I need a philosophy that's going to make me 100% happy. I love physical books, but
it's not worth it.
I'm making a philosophy to, I'm just going to have my books on my Kindle so that I can minimize the things I carry around. I miss things. I'm sentimental for some of the things I've thrown out, but it's not about being perfectly happy all the time. It's about today making as many choices as possible that I want to make.
I absolutely love what you're saying. In my travels, especially with Bulletproof, I've had a chance to meet some fantastically wealthy people who with tens to hundreds to even billions of dollars. And to help them with their cognitive performance biohacking stuff. And one thing that a lot of them have is nice houses, but they also have like a household manager. And this is someone who makes between like $40,000 and probably $100,000 a year, whose job it is to do, and probably more in New York or something, but it's their job is to run the house. So I don't know where groceries come from. The grocery fairy brings them. The smoke detector has a problem. I don't know. The smoke detector fairy does it. This is the fairy conjurer person.
Yeah. So the first time I sold a company, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but it just reminds me. The first time I sold a company was 1998.
This was Reset, right?
Yeah. Right. And then all of a sudden I bought a house bought a really nice place. And suddenly the next thing I realized, I was never alone in the house. There was always people there. I wouldn't even know who they were. There was always like people around doing mm-hmm. things. And that's a stress also. Like I don't need to deal with any of that right now. And I really wanted to avoid it. Another thing I wanted to mention is the groceries. So I never shop for groceries. So I do, I'm gonna call it the Airbnb diet. Maybe you'll appreciate this. But I have no food in the house. Okay. And the reason is you can't order delivery from a restaurant and say, okay, I'll have a bag of Doritos for dessert. Like there's no restaurant menu will have a bag of Doritos on the dessert menu. So the worst I can do is a slice of cake is the worst thing in my diet. But in general, I won't order the desserts then because I know I won't be exposed to anything that I know I won't have the willpower to avoid, particularly at night. So I'll just order what I think is healthy, so I'm not exposed to the things that are not necessarily healthy. And in the past year, I've probably lost like between 15 and 20 pounds.
Nice.
Yeah, just from doing this.
Even though you're eating out all the time.
Even though I'm ordering delivery all the time. I don't really like to leave. Once I'm in these beautiful apartments that I'm eating, I don't like to leave them too much.
Okay. So you're a bit of an introvert.
Bit of an introvert.
All right. Now, I was going to say, why didn't you consider a household manager? Did you have one when you made all your money? I know you lost it, but that's part of your story. It's something we have in common. I made $6 million and lost it. You made like 10 or 15 and lost it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I had everything under the sun. So it's just crazy. It's crazy what you can do with money and then you do it. So now the other thing is that I have a discipline in the sense that, oh, okay, I thought the other day about getting a new kind of camera so I could do Facebook Live easier. Mm-hmm. But then it was like, okay, it's not in my discipline to have an extra device, so I don't buy it. It's an easy decision. So I make an easy decision, because all the time I want new things, but it's an easy decision. I don't buy anything new.
Wow. Just don't buy anything new. It's pretty different from what I do. I run an organic farm. I should say more accurately.
You're a farmer.
More accurately, I live on an organic farm that provides all of my food, and I fund the organic farm. But I mean, I'll pull weeds on weekends with the kids. But for the most part, we have gardeners, and my wife is kind enough to like organize all that stuff. So she does some of the management, and I have like another guy who helps me out. And like between running a company where you have assistants all the time and running a farm, it basically is another business. There's always people around and things like that. And then because I'm a professional biohacker, I have a giant laboratory full of huge things, right? And yeah, there is a cognitive burden just having all this crap that needs maintenance, even though it's useful crap. So I like the idea of being able to just use what you want when you want to use it, even if it's someone else's and they manage it. And this works like health clubs. Like you could buy a universal machine at home as a clothes hanging rack, or you could just go to the gym the once a month you're actually going to go do it. So you're sort of doing this with everything in your life.
Right. So we sort of live in this, let's not call it the sharing economy, let's call it the access economy. So what you just described with the universal health machine or universal fitness machine is that you don't want to own it, but you want to have access to it. So that's why you get a gym membership to have access to what you need for health. So what I want to do is have access to anything I need to make a living, to live, to be productive, and so on, but I don't want to own anything. And I kind of feel in general we're moving towards that as an economy, where the need, unless you have kind of a fetish for luxury, which of course many people do, you don't really need to own as many things. You can just have access to them. For instance, why would I spend, let's call it $100,000 for a nice SUV when every day I can take a $10 Uber when I need one? You know, why would I buy let's say in New York City, a $2 million, you know, one bedroom apartment, which is what they cost in New York, when for $300 I could stay in one without putting it down $200,000 and getting into massive debt. So all of these decisions become a lot easier, like scary financial decisions become easier. And then the smaller ones as well, like what we were saying with the groceries.
Do you think that what you're proposing is something that someone with a normal paycheck could even consider?
Yeah, because I would say, you know, the Airbnbs are a little more expensive than renting, but Airbnb often, many apartments on Airbnb offer a significant monthly discount if you stay for a month, which translate to almost rent. Second, you're not buying furniture. You're not buying any kind of renter's insurance. You're not paying extra electricity bills or air conditioning bills or whatever. Now, presumably that's baked into the price, but that's fine. Right. It's baked into the price. So I just don't have to think of all these things. It's like consolidated into one price on Airbnb. Usually when somebody's renting an Airbnb for a month or more, they're living someplace else and they just want to kind of break even on, you know, the Airbnb or make a little bit of money, which is fine. I'll pay for that for them to make a little bit of money so I can avoid all these extra hassles.
You don't have to pay your bills, and that's actually worth a lot.
Yeah, like who wants to sit down once a month and write, you know, 10, 15, 20 checks out. That's a, for me, that's a stress. I have
a huge stressor.
I have all this stress about money. I don't want to deal with it. So this is like everything happens through, you know, and it doesn't have to be Airbnb, although that's what I use, but there's many different websites and ways to do this. Sometimes if a friend's going out of town for a month, I get a month free in their apartment, nice or not nice, it doesn't matter to me. So I just need to, I like to write as much as possible. I like to do my podcast. I run a business, but I hired or I work with somebody who manages the employees, and so I don't have to deal with the day-to-day business decisions. And unlike you, you're more involved day-to-day in your business, and so you have to be there. But I focus on the writing and the content part.
Yeah, I'm working on focusing more on podcasts and writing and content because that's where I add some unique value, and just hiring really good operators to help scale.
If you hire a really good operator, not only does your business become better, like I'm not the best operator, I know this.
Yeah, neither am I.
So it's better for me to hire a better operator who's someone who's passionate about operating, and for me to focus on the things that I love and I'm good at. And again, it's about what percentage of your day are you making choices that you like. Now, if you have, so I divide time with my kids, with my ex-wife. So if you have kids, when my kids are with me, they travel around with me from Airbnb to Airbnb.
I was about to ask you that. So how old are the kids?
18 and 15.
Okay, so they're old enough that they're totally chill. They can take an Uber by themselves and that works.
Right, and okay. I think if they were babies, I wouldn't be able to live this lifestyle. Yeah. So that's why I'm saying I'm not recommending this for anybody. And you know, there's two branches of minimalism. There's like the minimalists that you've spoken to.
Yeah,
who, and
good
they have
guys,
the,
yeah.
They have the documentary on Netflix. Good guys, and they're you know, they buy a few things, they keep live simple lives, and they're very good guys. And then there's the kind of Marie Kondo branch, which is like, I'm gonna put every object on the ground, and then I'm gonna hold it to my heart, and if I love it, I keep it. That's a lot of work. Like I can't do that. And then, you know, and again, it's not about being like just having around all these objects that I love. Why is she so much in love with all these objects?
Have you had her on your show?
I haven't, no.
So I want to interview her, and I'm going to, maybe she won't want to interview me, or she won't want me to do it, because I'm just going to have to say this. So I read her book, and I found her book fascinating.
Yeah, it's a great book.
It's really well written, and she deserved to be on the New York Times list for like a gazillion years,
because yeah.
The book is worth a read. Unfortunately, my wife Lana read the book. And I have now renamed Marie Kondo to Marie Komodo, as in Komodo dragon, because it caused my wonderful wife, Dr. Lana, to try and hide my coffee maker and all of my coffee paraphernalia under the counter, which is unacceptable as a human being to not be able to make coffee every morning. And pretty soon I'm like, our house is a beautiful expanse of loving emptiness, and I can't find anything I do, so the amount of time it takes me to do anything just quadrupled, and I was wasting all my time making sure the house looked all empty, and it just made me want to bang my head on the wall.
Right, so that's a stress.
It totally
so,
was.
So I find some kind of minimalism to be stressful, so I'm not criticizing them, it's just for me.
It's what works for you, right? I hear you.
And I call it more choicism. I'm really about...
I love that name.
You know, eliminate as many difficult choices, even minor difficult choices as possible, and just make it as easy as possible. It's life is hard in general. Like every day of life is hard, and make it as easy as possible to make the choices to do the things you love to do. And it's not always possible to do that, but you just want to increase your odds.
That is, it's a very interesting way of looking at it. And you're the first person I've come across who's taken it to this extreme. And I share your absolute, what's called aversion to making useless decisions. I find things like self-service on websites to be irritating. Like, I'm sorry, you should have someone to handle that because that's your job. You're the company. Like, don't ask me, Mr. Credit Card Company, to make me do extra work because you didn't want to pay your people to do it. Like, how about this? I'm not going to do it.
Right. Or I don't have voicemail, for instance, on my phone. So
what's voicemail? It's like a fax, right?
But a lot of people do have, like, you know, voicemail on their phone, and you call them, and they would call, and then I'd have some message, you know, don't worry, I'll call you back soon. I'm not calling them back ever. So now nobody can leave a message. And I don't pick up the phone either. So they can text me, but you're not necessarily obligated always to return texts. But voicemail, I feel like there was that obligation.
Well, I went through this. I maybe was an early adopter of the voicemail is evil. And when I was working in Silicon Valley, I did this. I was like, I'm spending 2 hours a day checking, like transcribing voicemail before they had transcription services. I'm like, this is horrible. So at first it was, please just send me an email. Really? Like, here's my email address. Like I probably won't check this very often. And now where I live, I'm in a relatively small town, and Canada is a little bit technologically behind the U.S., to be perfectly honest. And I love Canada. I'm grateful to be living there.
Are you from Canada originally?
No, I've just been I'm a permanent resident. I've been living there for 8 years.
Okay.
And I live on an island in a small town, and it's lovely. Bald eagles, and I look out over Salt Spring Island and grow my own food, and I'm close to an airport. Like, it's perfect for young kids. And the problem is everyone wants to call you and leave voicemail. And finally, I had to turn, they didn't know what to do when they didn't get voicemail. So I turned it up back on. It's like, listen, there is no chance ever that I will listen to or return this voicemail. You must not leave a voicemail. You have to send a text message or I will never get this.
Right? Yeah.
That strong of language. And it works half the time. The rest of the time, like, I tried to leave you, I left your voicemail. Like, I don't know. You can never pay me enough, and you will never get me to check a voicemail for the rest of my life, because anything I do has higher value to me than checking voicemail.
So here's another thing related to that. And people are particularly given the recent election cycle, people are somewhat critical of this, but I never read the news. So I don't read any newspapers. I don't go to CNN.com.
That's where the high five right there.
So, because, like, what are you going to read today in the news that will make your life better? There's almost nothing. Like, I'd rather read a book. Like, we have your book Headstrong right in front of me. I'd rather spend that. You only have limited amount of time. So I'd rather read a book that this was 2 or 3 years or 20 years of your curated thoughts boiled down into 400 pages or 300 pages that I could read and learn from, as opposed to reading about, I don't know, whatever, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West might get a divorce, which I hope they don't, but, you know, I haven't read, I don't read. And, you know, the same goes for the Twitter feed and the Facebook feed. I don't go down that at all.
It's an interesting one. There's a plugin for Facebook now that you can get on your browser that actually takes out the news feed.
Oh, interesting.
Which is, so you can still use Facebook to communicate, but you don't ever see the feed, which is kind of cool. I'm not remembering its name right now, but if you Google for it, you'll find it. It's like, don't bother me or something like
but
that.
But I just don't hit home on the Facebook page. Yeah. So I'll see my timeline and I'll see my messages on Facebook. That's actually the main way people message with me right now, is on Facebook.
Is it on Facebook?
But I don't look at the news feed, because, again, I'd rather read a book. We're both 49 years old, so there's
I'm only 44. I just look 49.
So I figure I have...
We're about the same.
I have, give or take, 15,000 days left to live.
Yeah.
A third of those.
We could give you more if you want.
I know you're trying to live to be 180. I don't even want to live to be 180. I'm fine with 90.
I hear you.
So 5,000, a third of my life I'll be asleep. So I've
we give you less sleep, man. Come on.
I know. I gotta. You do 5 to 6 hours. I sleep 8 hours. Maybe I'll get down.
I keep interrupting your point. I'm just giving you.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm gonna start taking the advice in Headstrong, and I wouldn't mind sleeping 5 to 6 hours. But right now I need 8.
Yeah, I hear you.
And you know, you only have limited time. Do you read Donald Trump's tweets, or do you read a good book?
I have struggled. I'm happy we're talking about this. This is more of like a two-way thing than I oftentimes do in these interviews. I've struggled with that thing. I don't watch the news. It is toxic to your nervous system. You want to put yourself in fight or flight, have your mitochondria tweaking all the time. It's like a constant barrage of threats and bad things that happen to other people that make you think they could happen to you.
And by the way, they specifically do the news to trigger fight or flight,
yeah,
right? Because it's really fight, flight, or freeze. So they want you to freeze to keep staring at the news.
Yeah, it's good for selling ads. And there might be valuable stuff in the news, but the signal to noise is terrible. So what I ended up doing is a little different than you on Facebook. I spent time training the Facebook algorithm. So I got through, show me less posts like this. And I managed to get all the political crap out of my feed. Like, it's
that's
gone.
Good.
And it takes whatever, a couple hours. Just, no, never show me this person's random rants again. No. And now I actually rely on my friends, and to a certain point, a couple other algorithms, because there's you're probably on Facebook mentions, like the influencer app. You have to have a lot of followers, so they don't even give it to you. But what it does is it intelligently lets my friends tell me what matters. So when I post on my Dave Asprey page, I'm finding all this amazing, cool research and stuff, but I'm not the sole source of that. It's all the people who are my friends who talk about cool stuff, and then algorithmically it's filtered. So for me, that serves as the equivalent of news because it's carefully curated.
I could see that. I mean, what I typically do is, because people say, you know, it's shameful if you're uninformed about what's going on with politics, particularly today's day and age.
It's not shameful. It means that you have a life.
Right. And also, the way I view it is, the news at best is the rough draft of history. So I would rather, see kind of a more final form. Like, there's this whole debate now, what's fake news, what's real news? We don't even know
what the facts are. It's all, every single bit of it, whether it's partisan or not, it's all fake news. It was crafted for you to listen to it, not necessarily based on what happened.
I mean, I used to go on a lot of news shows, particularly when I was, you know, I was running a hedge fund, I was more involved in the finance space. And I remember a producer once telling me, all we're trying to do is fill the space between ads. So, and that's coming from the producer of a major news show.
Wow.
So, you know, it just kind of right there and then I stopped with TV news. And then later on, I decided, you know what? I could be reading the New York Post, or I could be reading like a great short story and book, and I'd rather read the book.
Do you read some of the more, like the longer, more thoughtful, like New Yorker articles or Atlantic or
I might read what comes out once a year, the best American essays of the prior year. And then I'll get, you know, or if someone really says you have to read this one essay and, you know, these things. But in general, I just stick to books that I think are going to both educate and entertain me.
So you're really on the extreme there. And I'm thinking, like I say, I don't watch news. I don't watch unfiltered news, but because I have the friend filter stuff set up, I'll watch. And I'm entirely nonpartisan. Like I'm like, whoever's in office, if you're attracted to be in political office, you're probably like a bad person.
Demented.
Yeah, right. So like, I don't really care what like flag you wear, whatever. Like you felt a need to do this, so whatever. And sorry if you're a politician listening, you might be a good person. I just have never met you. So just kidding. No, I'm just
that was pissing off. There's a little bit of humor in it.
Yeah, I know, but now I'm like pissing off. Actually, I have friends and all sorts of things, but I don't think they're all bad people either. I'm just ranting. But what I do know is I will see clips from Fox News. I'll see clips from CNN. I'll see clips. But they're usually one-minute clips and usually filtered by someone who said, this is totally interesting. And at that point, someone else spent 100 hours looking at the news to find the clips. So I don't want to throw it all out entirely, but I'm not willing to search for like the occasional nugget as long as someone else does the search. And if their nugget detector isn't very good, like never follow that again. And so rapidly you get to see the 1 minute clip of like, well, that was inspiring.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to go. Again, I probably take an extreme.
I like your extreme.
Which to relieve that kind of decision stress. Like I just know I'd rather read a book than, I just always default to that. I'd rather read a book than watch the rough draft of history. But, often I write, I want people to read my things. But again, a book, like you say, is so curated. Like how many decades of knowledge went into the Bulletproof Diet and Headstrong? It's like four decades of knowledge.
It's been, I just look back at the amount of time in the anti-aging field and just, it's been my life's work in addition to all like building early internet infrastructure that mattered greatly at the time. But now I'm like, this is what matters to me. Yeah. And this is my best work that I can possibly do. Cause if 100,000 people read this book and I fill it with crap, I'm a mass murderer. Like 4 hours times 100,000. That's like multiple human lifetimes, right?
Right. So I'll take it one step further. People say, if you're uninformed about the news, you won't be able to vote. Now, let's say you lived in California, for instance, the vote's already, for president at least, is already predetermined. Like California is going one way, Texas is going another way. Like that's predetermined. But I guess in general, I don't even know.
Do you vote?
I don't vote at all. No, I have never, I have never voted. But
you just pissed off everyone, right?
I know. But here's the thing. You spent your time doing something. Here's how I would argue if I were you and I had never voted. I would say I spent these decades doing something that's going to impact million. How many people have had a bulletproof cup of coffee? How many cups of coffee have
you sold? Last year was 48 million.
So, okay. Yeah. So how many millions of cups of coffee do you have to sell to outweigh, oh, I didn't make one vote in California? Like probably 10 cups of coffee is enough value to outweigh one vote.
What do you say?
You sold 48 million.
There's people who say people died for the right to vote. and you're not even using it.
People also died so that you could write any book you want. People died so that you can create a company that could solve massive health problems. People died so I could write and focus my energies on what where I could have the most impact, positive impact on people. Voting, people kind of say, they kind of outsource their positive impact to a vote once every 4 years. I'd rather every day try to have positive impact.
And, I think it takes a lot of balls to say that. And
I get hurt by it. Like, I get hate mail.
You're inspiring me to get hate mail, because I'm going to talk about something I really haven't talked about publicly, but what the hell. All right. When I was 18, I studied all of the political stuff. I was like, every ballot measure, all this crap.
Why?
Well, because I thought it was my civic duty. I'm like, I have a right to vote, like all this stuff. I should go exercise this. And besides, I was 18. What the hell did I know? So I went out and I voted. And every single person I voted for, the first thing they did when they got in office was the exact opposite of what they promised to do. And it didn't matter whether I voted for a ballot measure or not, because your vote is essentially lost in a huge sea of votes. So I looked at that and I said, you know what? There's no point to this. I spent probably 20 hours preparing to become an informed voter, and it didn't matter because there were liars who I voted for, and because the ballots, they're also like poorly written and they're all special interest groups. And I just said, this is a huge waste of time. I'm not going to do it anymore. And I resolved at this point, I'd rather do something that matters, right? And it can matter to me, or at this point, matters to someone else. So yeah, I don't vote either. And I don't vote either because also I'm a computer hacker by training, and I can show you which major elections were hacked and exactly how, and God damn it, we know that. And this isn't a conspiracy theory thing like that. It's just math.
So right? So between hacked elections and lying politicians, I don't understand why people get so upset about the voting thing.
I don't either.
Again, there's so many ways. Help an old lady across the street every day for a year, and you've done much better than that vote.
One meaningful act of kindness does more to shift the country than voting. It does. And if you do one every day, you have completely moved the needle in a way that you will never do in a lifetime of voting.
Plus, there's all sorts of evidence that doing that is healthy.
It helps you to help other people. Like, it feels good. And acknowledging that you help other people as a selfish act is not a bad thing either, but it makes the world a better place. And like you, I just fundamentally believe I can do more with that time to serve others, or just to be a good father, right? To be a good husband, than worrying about all that, like thinking and worrying and stressing. And I know some amazing people who are top of their field who are like losing sleep and like experiencing true anxiety, whether they're liberals or conservatives, just over this election. I'm like,
yeah,
you never had control. Yeah,
people getting angry, like, you know, friend versus friend, like it's a civil war, you know, in the streets.
Right. And it's not like there's only two decisions. Like there's tens of thousands of variables, and just lumping them into two things so you can like be black or white. I just don't get it. Like I share values with people who on all sides of political fences, and so just to decide, I'm not going to be stressed about that. I'm not going to be unaware. But I'm going to focus on the things that deliver the most value, and I'm going to be okay with what happens. And if it's really not okay, there'll be many other people with pitchforks in line ahead of me. Like, it's okay.
So I have to ask you one piece of advice before we close this podcast, and it's related to your Headstrong book, even though I know you probably are tired of speaking about it nonstop.
It's a great work of many hours. I'm happy to share. What is it?
So in my approach of, you know, I want to make as many fun and good choices for myself as possible, I decided this very evening I'm going to do stand-up comedy to get myself out of my comfort zone. Yeah. So I knew a guy who runs a club, and I'm going up, and I'm not tweeting about it or Facebook. I'm just going up like all the rest of the comedians. No, not like a talk based around me or anything. And but now I'm starting to get scared about it. So what headstrong thing should I do between now and 9 p.m. to get my energy levels high, to be calm and to be good?
I am going to answer this for you. And as part of the answer, I got to tell you, I did exactly this for Headstrong, because pushing your limits is important. I recorded my first rap.
Okay. That's good.
I have zero skills. And my friend Craig Handley from Listen Trust was like, Dave, I was invited to go on tour to 300 cities with a really big rapper. Because you wouldn't guess that I'm a power lifter, but I can rap. So we went down. He like laid down lyrics and like I'm throwing down. Okay, I have no skills at all.
That's pretty cool. I want to do that.
It was a little stressful, but it was also like really kind of fun because I dealt with the stress. So I wasn't feeling anxiety when I did it. It was just like joy and a little bit of mirth and self-deprecating humor. But we're putting the video out for Headstrong. And it's like one of the lines is, you got muffin top in your crop. And like it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever done. There's a video, all that stuff. So this was way outside my comfort zone because I'm like more of a university lecturer by training. Like I can give a good speech, but so I feel what you're doing because literally over the last month, I've been like, did I really just do this? So first thing you want to do is you want to do some deep breathing exercises. Have you ever done the heart rate variability stuff that we've talked about before?
No.
All right. So normally I would tell you, in fact, you have an iPhone, right?
Yeah.
I
have an Android.
An Android. Oh, crap. That's not going to work. I would say I could loan you my heart rate variability thing. But if we have time at the end of this, I'll actually hook it up to your ear and you can do this. And I'll tell you, for $99, you can get a heart rate variability sensor. It's very small. It'll fit in one of your three outfits pockets. You need to do this for 20 minutes a day for 6 weeks until you learn how to get conscious control of your fight or flight response. Because what I do before I go on stage, and I was on Tony Robbins' stage 2 weeks ago in front of 9,000 screaming people. It was really epic. Not a drop of stress, not even a little bit. And the way you do that is you take a deep breath. And I'll walk you through this, but it's easier when you have a sensor telling you you got it right. So what you're going to do, you're going to do this before you go on stage. You can do it a couple times before then. You close your eyes. And you take a deep breath in for about 5 seconds and you focus on the center of your chest, like right in your sternum. And imagine like what it feels like there, not what it looks like, but actually the sensation, like the tingly or like if someone was touching it. You might even want to touch your chest when you do it. And as you breathe in, focus the energy right there and then fill a balloon. Just as it could be as big as your body, as big as the world.
While you're inhaling.
While you're inhaling. So you're like, you're filling this balloon. When the balloon is full, then you imagine puppies, right? It could be puppies. It could be the first time you met your wife, you know, a hug with your mom. The most emotionally joyful, amazing experience, like maybe the first time you held one of your kids, like really intense. But imagine what it felt like on your skin, in your body. It's the felt sense that gets deep in your tissues. And as your balloon is full, you just breathe up and out and let that just kind of come down around you. And do that over and over, 5-6 times. If you do it for even 10 minutes. What that does, that turns on that deep sense of just gratitude and joy, and it absolutely pummels the anxiety and the fear and the stress. And when you do that, it actually can help other people and train their nervous system to you. And this is something I do before I go on stage.
So you inhale for 5 seconds. You do this various visualization, which I remember.
You breathe out for 5 seconds.
And how long do you hold it, the breath in?
You can, if you're doing a box breath, you do 5 seconds. But with this kind of breathing, just breathe in for five. Release, and as you release and just breathe out for five. You're doing it through your nose is better. So,
and now you say 6 weeks. I'm talking about tonight.
Yeah, this will work for tonight. But if you do this every day with a sensor for 6 weeks, you'll actually develop a new control system for your nervous system that allows you to feel when you switch out of this mode, which is now my native space. This is the mode of gratitude and just openness. This is a parasympathetic dominant mode. So you can think on your feet and still be funny and still connect with people without bypassing your thoughts and going straight to your amygdala. So this is going to really help you. And the other thing you want to do is you want to have lots of energy when you do it, but not like jittery, cranky energy.
Right.
So if coffee helps, fine. It's going to ruin your sleep if you do that. So I would say you want to have some brain octane. You want to have some of the mitochondrial stimulants. What do you normally have for dinner?
Fish.
Fish. Okay, cool. So do you feel better after you eat or before you eat?
I don't know. I'm not really that.
You're not that sensitive. Okay, cool. So then have a light meal with fish and lots of veggies and do it probably an hour before.
All right.
And if you do that, you're going to have some energy there. And I would, before you go on stage, like a few like short-term energy enhancers, whatever works for you. I'll give you some unfair advantage. Like literally that is the best stuff before stage.
I need unfair advantage.
I'm not trying to pitch my stuff at all here. I'm just telling you that's what I do before I go on stage. And just be calm. And before you walk out there, this will sound goofy, but just feel love for the audience. Like literally don't think about love, feel love and just send it out of you and connect with them that way. And like you'll do well.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Dave.
That was fun.
Yeah.
If you like this episode, you know what to do. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the James Altucher Show, because you can tell this guy is really, really amazing, even though he doesn't vote, which makes him a bad person. And let's see, you should also leave him a 5-star review, leave me a 5-star review, pick up a copy of Headstrong if you don't have it yet. It just hit number, I think it was number 6 of all books on Amazon this week, and I saw number 1 of the new releases. So I appreciate your support. If you guys pick up a copy of the book, it's really, really meaningful. So thanks, James.
Yeah, thank you, Dave.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.